gonna be afraid to care. Don't leave me. Look around. Choose your own ground. How you live, how you fly. Smiles you'll give and tears you'll cry. All you touch and all you see is all your life will ever be. Run, dig that hole, get the sun. When at last the work is done, round it down, it's time to dig another one. How you live and how you fly. Only if you ride the tide, balanced on the biggest wave, race towards another grave.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's Perspectives on America. Jeff Bennett here. It's an interesting couple of days of programming. And for those of you who tuned in yesterday, I've actually received some very interesting emails today. Although I've got a problem with two of my emails. My Kettle Moraine email will not be active until tomorrow. The long story ticks me off. But what we're sharing with you tonight is a speech, a very lengthy speech that was given by an extremely interesting man. I'll let you know who it was at the end of the program tonight, because there's a very good chance I'll never be able to complete this thing. I am one third of the way into his lecture. This guy is profound with his knowledge. And this lecture was given in 1967. Somebody somewhere saw the handwriting on the wall. Of course, in 67, I was getting ready to go to Nam. But that's a story for another day. Let's pick up where we left off. Under our Constitution, all control of our money system is vested solely in our Congress. But Schiff's next important step was to seduce our Congress to betray that constitutional edict by surrendering that control to the hierarchy of the Illuminati's great conspiracy. And in order to legalize that surrender and thus make the people powerless to resist it, it would be necessary to have Congress enact special legislation. And in order to accomplish that, Schiff would have to infiltrate stooges into both houses of Congress, stooges powerful enough to railroad Congress into passing such legislation. Equally, or maybe even more important, he would have to plant a stooge in the White House, a president that is without integrity, without scruples, who would sign that legislation into law. And in order to accomplish that, he had to get control of either Republican or the Democratic Party. Well, the Democratic Party was the more vulnerable. It was the hungrier of the two parties, except for Grover Cleveland. The Democrats had been unable to land one of their men in the White House since before the Civil War. And there were two reasons for that. First of all, poverty of the party. There were considerably more Republican-minded voters than Democrats. What the hell happened today? The poverty matter, my friends, was not a great problem, but the voter problem was a different story. But as our author previously said, Schiff was a smart cookie. Here's the atrocious and murderous method he employed to solve that voter problem. His solution emphasized how very little the Jewish internationalist bankers cared about their own racial brethren, as we would see. And suddenly around 1890, there broke out a nationwide series of pogroms in Russia. Many, many thousands of innocent Jews, men, women, children, were slaughtered by the Cossacks and other peasants. And similar pogroms with similar slaughter of innocent Jews broke out in Poland, Romania, Bulgaria. And all those pogroms were fomented by Rothschild agents. And as a result, the Jewish terrified refugees from all of those nations swarmed into the United States. And that continued for the next two or three decades because the pogroms were continuous through all those years. And all those refugees were aided by self-styled humanitarian committees set up by Schiff and the Rothschilds and all the Rothschild affiliates. By the way, let me enter a little note here. If you want greater insight into the Schiff story, there is a program that I did years ago that I have published the entire transcript of that program. It's called The Mask of Demetrios. You can find that on our website, metropolis.cafe. It is phenomenal. Now, once again, I have this sick little twisted way of finding ways to intertwine old Hollywood movie titles and stuff of that nature into it. And there's a good reason for that. I'd strongly urge you take the time to go read that. It's called Mask of Demetrios. Who knows? Maybe at some point in time we'll air that. I don't know if we've ever aired that here on the network. We'll find out. I can't remember how many hours that sucker went on. All right, so back to our story. In the main, the refugees streamed into New York, but the Schiff Rothschild humanitarian committees found ways to shuffle many of them into other large cities like Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia, you know, the city of brotherly love, where even the brothers don't love each other. What about Detroit, Los Angeles? All of them then, of course, were quickly transformed into naturalized citizens, educated to register as Democrats. Oh, you think that's not going to happen with all the Lord knows how many tens of thousands of millions of illegals that are being allowed into this country today? Yeah. So, back then, all of that so-called minority group became solid Democratic voter blocks in their communities, all controlled and maneuvered by their so-called benefactors. And shortly after the turn of the century, they became vital factors in the political life of this nation. And that was one of the methods that Schiff employed to plant men like Nelson Aldrich in our Senate and Woodrow Wilson in the White House. Now, at this point, let me remind you of another one of the important jobs that was assigned to Schiff when he was dispatched to America. I refer to the job of destroying the unity of the American people by creating minority group and racial strife. And by the pogrom-driven Jewish refugees into America, Schiff was creating a ready-made minority group for that purpose. But the Jewish people as a whole, made fearful by the pogroms, could not be depended upon to create the violence necessary to destroyed the unity of American people. But right within America, there was an already made-to-order, although as yet a sleeping minority group. The Negroes, who could be sparked into so-called demonstrations, rioting, looting, murder, every other type of lawlessness. All that was necessary was to incite and arouse them. And together, those two minority groups, properly maneuvered, could be used to create exactly the king of strife in America that the Illuminati would need to accomplish their objective. And thus, at that same time that Schiff and co-conspirators were laying their plans for the entrapment of our money system, they were also perfecting plans to hit the unsuspecting American people with an explosive, terrifying racial upheaval that would tear the people into hate factions and create chaos throughout the nation, especially on all college and university campuses. Oh, boy, that sure sounds familiar today, doesn't it? But then you see, all of this was protected by Earl Warren's decisions and our so-called leaders in Washington, D.C. Oh, you remember the Warren Commission on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy? Yeah. Of course, perfecting those plans required time and infinitely patient organizing. Jack Kennedy, during his term of office as president, became a Christian. In his attempt to repent, he tried to inform the people of this nation at least twice that the office of the President of the United States was being manipulated by the Illuminati, the CFR. And at the same time, he put a stop to the borrowing of Federal Reserve notes from the Federal Reserve Bank and began issuing United States notes, which was interest-free on the credit of the United States. It was the issuing of the United States notes that caused Jack Kennedy to be assassinated. Upon the taking of the oath of office, Lyndon Baines Johnson stopped the issuing of the U.S. notes and went back to borrowing Federal Reserve Bank notes, which was loaned to the people of the United States at the going rate of interest of 17%. And the U.S. notes that were issued under John F. Kennedy was of the 1963 series, which bared a red seal on the face of the note. Now, to remove all doubts, allow me to take a few moments to give you the documentary proof of this racial strife plot. First of all, they had to create the leadership and organizations to draw in millions of dupes, both Jewish and Negroes, who would do the demonstrating and commit the rioting and the looting, the lawlessness. And so in 1909, Schiff, the Laymans, and other conspirators organized and set up the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Oh, you remember that. That's the NAACP. And the presidents and the directors and the legal counsels of the NAACP were always white men, Jews, appointed by Schiff. And this is the case to this very day as of 1967. That is something I've known for a good portion of my life and never could get people to understand it. Okay, so 1913 comes along. The Schiff Group organizes the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith, commonly known as the ADL, to serve as the Gestapo and the Hatchet Man outfit for the entire Great Conspiracy. And today, the sinister ADL maintains over 2,000 agencies in all parts of this country and advise and completely control every action of the NAACP or the Urban League of all other so-called Negro civil rights organizations throughout the nation, including such leaders as Martin Luther King, Stokely Carmichael, Bernard Rustin, and others of their ilk. And in addition, the ADL acquired absolute control of the advertising budgets of many department stores, hotel chains, and television and radio industrialist sponsors. Also, advertising agencies, in order to control practically all the mass communications media and force every loyal newspaper to slant and falsify the news and to further incite and at the same time create sympathy for the lawlessness and the violence of the Negro mobs. And there is documentary proof of the beginning of their deliberate plot to foment the Negroes into all their lawlessness. We can remove the word Negro today. Blacks, BLM, all this stuff. Do you begin to smell this whole mess that we're living through today? Is there anything I've shared with you during this last hour and a quarter that doesn't shock you? Because we're living it still. Let's go back to the year 1910. One Israel Zengel wrote a play entitled The Melting Pot. It was a sheer propaganda to incite the blacks and the Jews, because the play purportedly visualized how the American people were discriminating against and persecuting Jews and Negroes. And at that time, nobody seemed to realize that it was a propaganda play. It was that cleverly written. The propaganda was well wrapped up in the truly great entertainment in the play, and it was a big Broadway hit. Now, in those years, the legendary Diamond Jim Brady used to throw a banquet at the famous Delmonico restaurant in New York after the opening performance of a popular play. Oh, he threw such a party for the cast of The Melting Pot, its author, its producer, and chosen Broadway celebrities. But then I'd already made a personal mark on the Broadway theater, and it was invited to that party. That's our author. And there he met George Bernard Shaw and a Jewish writer named Israel Cohen. Zangwill, Shaw, Cohen were the ones who created the Fabian Society in England that had worked closely with a Frankfurt Jew named Mordecai, who had changed his name to Karl Marx. But remember, at that time, both Marxism and communism were just emerging, and nobody paid much attention to either. Nobody suspected the propaganda in the writings of those three really brilliant writers. And so at the banquet, Israel Cohen told our author that he was then engaged in writing a book which was to be followed up on Zangwill's Melting Pot. The title of his book was to be A Racial Program for the 20th Century. Now, at that time, our author was completely absorbed by his work as a playwright. Significant as that title was, its real objective never dawned on him, nor was he interested in reading the book. But it suddenly hit him with the force of a hydrogen bomb when he received a newspaper clipping of an item published by the Washington, D.C. Evening Star in May of 1957. And that item was a verbatim reprint of the following excerpt in Israel Cohen's book. Remember, the book was entitled A Racial Program for the 20th Century, and it read exactly, "We must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tension. By propounding into the consciousness of the dark races that for centuries they have been oppressed by the whites, we can move them to the program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. While inflaming the Negro minority against the whites, we will instill in the whites a guilt complex for their exploitation of the Negroes. And we will aid the Negroes to rise to prominence in every walk of life, in the professions, and in the world of sports and entertainment. And with this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and begin a process which will deliver America to our cause." Thus, the authenticity of that passage in Cohen's book was fully established. But the one question that remained on mine was whether it represented the official policy or plot of the Communist Party or just a personal expression of Cohen himself. And hence, our author sought more proof and found it in an official pamphlet published in 1935 by the New York Communist Party's official Workers' Library Publishers. And that pamphlet was entitled The Negroes in a Soviet America. And it urged the Negroes to rise up and form a Soviet state in the South and apply for admission to the Soviet Union. And it contained a firm pledge that the revolt would be supported by all American Reds and so-called liberals. And on page 38, it promised that a Soviet government would confer greater benefits to Negroes than to whites. And again, that official communist pamphlet pledged that any act of discrimination or prejudice against a Negro will become a crime under the revolutionary law, end quote. And that statement proved that the excerpt in Israel Cohen's book, published in 1913, was an official edict of the Communist Party and directly in line with the Illuminati blueprint for world revolution issued by Weishaupt and later by Albert Pike. Maybe there's only one question, and that's to prove that the communist regime was directly controlled by American Jacob Schiff and London Rothschild masterminds of the Great Conspiracy. At some point, our author attempts to provide the proof that will remove even a remote doubt that the Communist Party, as we know it, was created by those same masterminds capitalist, if you'll note, that Schiff and the Warburgs and the Rothschilds planned and financed the entire Russian Revolution and the murder of the Tsar and his family, and that Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin took their orders directly from Schiff and the other capitalists whom they supposedly were fighting. Now can you begin to see why the vile Earl Warren and his equally vile co-Supreme Court justices issued that infamous and treasonous degradation decision in 1954? It was to aid and abet the plot of the Illuminati conspirators to create tension and strife between the Negroes and the whites. Can you see why the same Earl Warren issued a decision prohibiting Christian prayers and Christmas carols in our schools? Why did Kennedy do likewise? Can we see why Johnson and 66 senators, despite the protests of 90% of the American people, voted for the consular treaty, which opened our entire country to Russian spies and saboteurs? According to our author, all 66 of those senators were 20th century Benedict Arnolds, which takes me back to the opening lines of the first hour tonight, talking about making those bastards pay. It is, as I just referenced, it is up to you and you, all the American people, to force Congress, our elected servants, to haul in those American traitors for impeachments. And when proven guilty, they will be given the punishment prescribed for traitors who aid and abet our enemies. And that includes, my friends, the enforcing of rigid investigations by Congress of the CFR at all their fronts, the ADL, the NAACP, SNIC, and such illuminated and lottie tools as Martin Luther King. Such investigations would completely unmask all the leaders in D.C. and the Illuminati and all their affiliations and affiliates as traitors carrying out the Illuminati plot. And it would completely unmask the United Nations as the intended crux of the entire plot and force Congress to take the U.S. out of the U.N. and hurl the hell U.N. out of the U.S. Maybe it would finally destroy the U.N. and its entire plot. These kind of things are amazing. Allow me to reiterate and stress one vital point, which I urge you to never forget, he continues. If you wish to save our country for your children and their children, here's the point. Every unconstitutional and unlawful act committed by Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy are now being committed by Johnson at the time that he gave this lecture. And later George Bush and Bill Clinton, and it goes on and on and on. All of this is exactly in line with the Illuminati conspirators' century-old plot outlined by Weishaupt and Albert Pike. Now remember, what I'm sharing with you was a lecture given in 1967. And listen to, allow me to rephrase that, share that line with you again. Every unconstitutional and unlawful act committed by Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy, later committed by Johnson, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, Bush Jr., Obama, and his ultimate replacement. Oh, that's right. Obama is still a president. No, not according to this date. No, this is the second day of May, 2024. Don't think Obama's not controlling Biden, who's too brain dead. Every one of these decisions, all of this, is in line with the Illuminati conspirators' centuries-old plot. Every vicious decision issued by the traitorous Earl Warren and his equally traitorous Supreme Court justices was directly in line with what the Illuminati blueprint required. And that all the treason committed by our State Department under Rusk and earlier by John Foster Dulles and Marshall, also all the treason committed by McNamara and his predecessors, is directly in line with that same Illuminati blueprint for the takeover of the world. And also the amazing treason of various members of our Congress, those 66 senators who signed the consular treaty, all been committed on orders from the Illuminati. And so now we return back to Jacob Schiff's entrapment of our money system and the treasonous actions that followed, which will all reveal the Schiff-Rothschild control of not only Karl Marx, but Lenin, Trotsky, Stalin, who created the Revolution of Russia, set up the Communist Party. 1908, Schiff decides the time had come for his seizure of our money system. His chief lieutenants in that seizure were Colonel Edward Mandel House, whose entire career was that of chief executive and courier for Schiff. House wrote a four-part book set that I own. It is shocking. But then I've taught much about House over the years anyway. Nope, House was, as we mentioned, chief executive and courier for Schiff. Bernard Baruch, Herman Lehman. In the fall of 1908, they assembled in secret conclave at the Jekyll Island Hunt Club, owned by J.P. Morgan at Jekyll Island, Georgia. And among those present were J.P. Morgan, John B. Rockefeller, Colonel House, Senator Nelson Aldrich, Schiff, Stillman, and Van Lipp of the New York National City Bank, W.J. Seligman, Eugene Meyer, Bernard Baruch, Herbert Lehman, Paul Warburg, in short, all of the international bankers in America, all of the members of the hierarchy of the Illuminati's great conspiracy. And 1 week later, they emerged with what they called the Federal Reserve System. Senator Aldrich was the stooge who was to railroad it through Congress. But they held that railroading in abeyance for one chief reason. Because they'd first have to plant their man, an obedient stooge, in the White House to sign their Federal Reserve Act into law. Because they knew that even if the Senate would pass that act unanimously, the then newly elected President Taft would promptly veto it. And so they waited. In 1912, their man, Woodrow Wilson, was elected to the presidency. And immediately after Wilson was inaugurated, Aldrich railroaded the Federal Reserve Act through both houses of Congress. And Wilson promptly signed it, and the Federal Reserve Act became law. And that heinous act of treason was committed on December 23rd, 1913, 2 days before Christmas, when all the members of Congress, except for several carefully picked representatives and three equally carefully picked senators, were away from Washington. How heinous and treasonous was that act? I'll tell you, our founding fathers knew full well the power of money. They knew that whoever had that power held the destiny of our nation in his hands. And therefore, they carefully guarded this power when they set forth in the Constitution that Congress, the elected representatives of the people alone, would have power. The constitutional language on this point is brief, concise, and specific, stated in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 5, defining the duties and powers of Congress, and I quote, to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and of foreign coin, and the standard of weights and measures, end of quote. My friends, on that tragic, unforgettable day of infamy, December 23rd, 1913, the men we sent to Washington to safeguard our interests, the representatives, the senators, and Woodrow Wilson, delivered the destiny of this nation to the hands of two aliens from Eastern Europe, Jacob Schiff and Paul Warburg. Well, Warburg was a very recent immigrant who'd come here on orders from Rothschild for the express purpose of blueprinting that foul Federal Reserve Act. And once again, allow me to make reference to that other program that I did so many years ago. And I'm blanking. I just flat blanked on my own work. Is that terrible? It's unreal. I got to float down to get it. It's crazy. This is a very involved multi-part series that I did so many years ago called The Mask of Demetrios. I'll tell you later where you can find it. Well, I've told you where you can find it. Go to metropolis.cafe, and under the search, just type in the words, The Mask of Demetrios. It will shock you. Now, keep this in mind. We're dealing with a unique group of people in this country, I guess, uneducated. The vast majority of the American people think of the Federal Reserve System as a United States government agency, which, of course, we know is positively false. All of the stock of the Federal Reserve banks is owned by the member banks, and the heads of member banks are all members of the hierarchy of the great Illuminati conspiracy known as the CFR. The owners are all foreigners. And the details of this transaction, in which many traitorous so-called Americans participated, are far too long for us to share with you on this program today. But all those details are available in a book entitled The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, written by Eustace Mullins. And in that book, Mullins told the entire horrifying story and backed it up with unquestionable documentation. And aside from it being a truly fascinating and shocking story of the Great Betrayal, every American should read it as a matter of vital intelligence for the time when the entire American people will finally wake up and smash the entire conspiracy, and with God's help, that awakening will surely come. Now, if you think that all these aliens and their by accident of birth American co-conspirators would be content with just the control of our money system, well, then we'd all be in for another very sad shock, right? Federal Reserve System gave the conspirators complete control of our money system, but in no way touched the earnings of the people, because the Constitution positively forbids what is now known as the 20% withholding tax. Of course, all those numbers have changed now. But the Illuminati blueprint for one world enslavement called for the confiscation of all private property and control of individual earning powers. And this, and Karl Marx stressed that feature in his own blueprint, had to be accomplished by a progressive graduated income tax. And as has been stated, such a tax could not lawfully be imposed upon the American people. It was succinctly and expressly forbidden by our Constitution. And thus only an amendment to the Constitution could give the federal government such confiscatory powers. Well, that too is not an insurmountable problem for our Machiavellian plotters. Oh no, the same elected leaders in both houses of Congress and the same Woodrow Wilson who signed the infamous Federal Reserve Act into law, oh, they amended the Constitution to make the federal income tax known as the 16th Amendment, a law of the land. And both are illegal under our Constitution. In short, the same damn traitors signed both betrayals. And the Federal Reserve Act and the 16th Amendment into law. And yet it seems that nobody ever realized that the 16th Amendment was set up to rob, and I do mean rob, the people of their earnings by the income tax provision. Of course, the plotters didn't fully use the provision until World War II, when that great humanitarian Franklin Delano Roosevelt applied a 20% withholding tax on all small wage earners and up to 90% on higher incomes. Oh, of course, he faithfully promised it would only be for the duration of the war. But what a promise to such a charlatan who in 1940, when he was running for his third term, kept proclaiming, I say again and again and again that I will never send American boys to fight on foreign soil. Now remember, he was proclaiming that statement even as he was already preparing to plunge us into World War II by enticing the Japanese into that sneak attack on Pearl Harbor to furnish him with his excuse. And before we forget, let me remind you that another charlatan named Woodrow Wilson used exactly the same campaign slogan in 1916. Oh, his slogan was, re-elect the man who will keep your sons out of war. Exactly the same formula, exactly the same promises. But wait, as Al Jolson used to say, you ain't heard nothing yet. Now, that 16th Amendment income tax trap was intended to confiscate and rob the earnings of a common herd, you and me. It was not intended to even touch the huge incomes of the Illuminati gang, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Lehmans, and all the other conspirators. And so together you see with that 16th Amendment they created with what they called the tax-free foundations that would enable the conspirators to transform their huge wealth into so-called foundations and avoid payment of virtually all income taxes. And the excuse for it was that the earnings of those tax-free foundations would be devoted to humanitarian philanthropy. And so we now have the several Rockefeller foundations, the Carnegie, the Dowman Fund, the Ford Foundation, the Mellon Fund, and hundreds of similar tax-free foundations. Now, what kind of philanthropy do these foundations support? Oh, they all finance all the civil rights groups and conservation movements, and they're creating all the chaos and rioting all over the country. They finance the Martin Lucifer Kings. The Ford Foundation financed the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions in Santa Barbara, commonly referred to as Moscow West, which is headed by Wonder Boy Hutchins, Walter Reuther, Erwin Kahneman, others of that ilk. In short, my friends, the tax-free foundations finance those who are doing the job for the Illuminati's great conspiracy. And what in the hell are the hundreds of billions of dollars they confiscate every year from the earnings of you and I? Oh, that's right. It's going to Ukraine. It's going to Israel. It's going to whoever our enemies are. And they truly are. That's all part of the game. And boy, more and more of it's going to Joey Biden's just giving it all away because he's being instructed to do so by Barack and company. Listen, for one thing, there is this foreign aid gimmick, which gives billions to communist Tito plus gifts of hundreds of jet planes, many of which were turned over to Castro, plus the cost of training communist pilots so they can better shoot down our planes. Billions to Red Poland, billions to India, billions to Sukarno. Billions to other enemies of the U.S. That's what treasonous, railroaded 16th Amendment has done to our nation and to the American people, to you and me, to our children, our grandchildren. Do you get to understand all of this nonsense? It is pure insanity. Part two. Yeah. I've just now gotten through part one. The name of the column is The Illuminati and the Council on Foreign Relations. I've given it a different title for the program tonight. And I can't even remember what that title was. I gave it to Michael an hour or so ago. If you're there, tell me what the title is I gave you. Our CFR Illuminati controlled federal government can grant tax-free status to all foundations and pro-red one world. Oh, they live among us. Okay. Yeah, that does fit. Pro-red one-world outfits. Fund for the Republic. But if you are a patriotic pro-organization is too outspokenly pro-American, they can terrify and intimidate you by finding a misplaced comma in your income tax report or by threatening you with penalties, fines, even prison. Of course, future historians still wonder how the American people could have been so naive and stupid does they ever have permitted such audacious, brazen acts of treason as the Federal Reserve Act and the 16th Amendment. We weren't naive. We were not stupid. The answer is they trusted the men that we elected to safeguard our country and our people. They just didn't have even an inkling about either betrayal until after each one had been accomplished. My friends, it was the Illuminati-controlled mass communications media that has kept and is to this day still keeping our people naive and stupid and unaware of the treason being committed. Now the great question is, when the hell will the people wake up and do to our traitors of today what George Washington and our founding fathers would have done to Benedict Arnold? Yeah, well, Arnold was kind of a petty traitor compared to our present traitors in D.C., But let's get back to the events that followed the rape of our Constitution by the passage of the Federal Reserve Act and the 16th Amendment. Was Wilson completely under their control? The mastermind of the great conspiracy put in motion their next, what hope would be their final steps to achieve their one world government. And the first of those steps was to be World War I. Why war? Simple. Only excuse for a one world government was that it will supposedly ensure peace. And the only thing that can make people cry for peace is war. War brings chaos, destruction, exhaustion, and to the winner as well as the loser. Brings economic ruin to both. Most importantly, it destroys the flower of the young manhood of both. And to the saddened and heartbroken oldsters, you know, the mothers and the fathers who are left with nothing but memories of their beloved children, peace becomes worth any price. And that's the emotion upon which the conspirators depend for the success of their satanic plot. So throughout the 19th century, from 1814 to 1914, the world as a whole was at peace. Such wars like the Franco-Prussian, our own Civil War, the Russo-Japanese War, were what might be termed local disturbances that didn't affect the rest of the world. All the great nations were prosperous. The people were staunchly nationalistic, fiercely proud of their sovereignties. Utterly unthinkable that the French and the German peoples would be willing to live under a one-world government of the Turks and the Russians and the Chinese and the Japanese. Even more unthinkable is that Kaiser Wilhelm or Franz Josef or Tsar Nicholas or any monarch would willingly and meekly surrender his throne to a one-world government. Bear in mind, my friends, that the peoples in all nations are the real power, and the only thing war could make the peoples yearn and clamor for would be peace, ensuring a one-world government. But it would have to be a frightful and horribly devastating war. It could not be just a local disturbing war between just two nations. It would have to be a world war. No major nation must be left untouched by the horrors and the devastation of such a war. The cry for peace, peace, must be made universal. And actually, that was the format set by the Illuminati and Nathan Rothschild at the turn of the 19th century. And they first maneuvered all of Europe into the Napoleonic Wars. And then the Congress in Vienna, which they, and particularly Rothschild, planned to transform into a League of Nations, which was to have been the housing for their one world government, exactly as the present United Nations was set up to be the housing for the forthcoming, God forbid, one world government. But anyway, that was the format the House of Rothschild and Jacob Schiff decided to employ to achieve their objective in 1914. Of course, they knew that the same format had failed in 1814, but yeah, they theorized that this was only because the Tsar of Russia had torpedoed that scheme. Well, the present 1914 conspirators will eliminate that 1814 fly in the ointment. They would make sure that after the New World War that they were conspiring, there'd be no Tsar of Russia around to throw monkey wrenches into the machinery. We could go into how they accomplished that first step to launch a world war, but we'll do a little bit. History records World War I was precipitated by a trivial incident. Trivial incident. The kind of incident that both Weishaupt and Albert Pike had incorporated in their blueprints. And that incident was the assassination of an Austrian archduke arranged by the Illuminati masterminds. And the war followed. And it involved Germany and Austria, Hungary and their allies, the so-called Axis powers, against France and Britain and Russia, called the Allies. Only the United States was not involved during the first 2 years. By 1917, the conspirators had achieved their primary objective. All of Europe was in a state of destitution. All the peoples were war-weary, crying for peace. And the outcome, too, was all set. It was to come as soon as the United States would be hurled on the side of the Allies, and that was all set to happen immediately after Wilson's re-election. After that, there could only be one outcome, complete victory for the Allies. And to fully confirm my statement that long before 1917, the conspiracy headed in America by Jacob Schiff had it all set to hurl the U.S. into that war. When Wilson was campaigning for re-election in 1916, his chief appeal was, re-elect the man who will keep your sons out of the war. But during that same campaign, the Republican Party publicly charged that Wilson had long committed himself to throw us into that war. And they charged that if he would be defeated, he could accomplish that act during his few remaining months in office, but if re-elected, he would hold off until after the election. But at that time, the American people looked upon Wilson as a God-man. Well, Wilson was reelected, and as per the schedule of the conspirators, he hurled us into war in 1917. Used the sinking of the Lusitania as an excuse. A sinking which also was prearranged. Roosevelt, yeah, also a God-man in the eyes of the American people, followed the same technique in 1941 when he used the prearranged Pearl Harbor attack as the excuse for hurling us into World War II. Now, exactly as the conspirators planned, victory for the Allies would eliminate all the monarchs of the defeated nations and leave all their people leaderless, confused, bewildered, and perfectly conditioned for the one-world government. The great conspiracy intended would follow, but there would still be an obstacle. And that same obstacle that had balked the Illuminati and Rothschild at the Congress in Vienna, you know, the so-called peace gathering, after the Napoleonic Wars. Russia would be on the winning side this time, as it was in 1814, and therefore the Tsar would be securely seated in his throne. Here it is pertinent to note that Russia, under the Tsarist regime, had been the one country in which the Illuminati had never made any headway, nor had the Rothschilds ever been able to infiltrate in their banking interests, and thus a winning Tsar would be more difficult than ever to cope with. Even if he could be enticed into so-called League of Nations, it was a foregone conclusion that he would never, but never go for a one-world government. And so even before the outbreak of World War I, the conspirators had a plan in making to carry out Nathan Rothschild's vow of 1814 to destroy the Tsar and also murder all possible royal heirs to the throne. It would have to be done before the close of the war. And the Russian Bolsheviks were to be their instruments in this particular plot. And from the turn of the century, the chiefs of the Bolsheviks were Nikolai Lenin, Leon Trotsky, and later Joseph Stalin. Of course, they were not their true family names, oh no. Prior to the outbreak, Switzerland became their haven. Trotsky's headquarters on the Lower East Side of New York, largely the habitat of Russian Jewish refugees. Both Lenin and Trotsky were similarly bewhiskered and unkempt. And in those days, that was the badge of Bolshevism. Oh, both lived well, yet neither had a regular occupation. Neither had any visible means of support, yet both always had plenty of money. All those mysteries were solved in 1917. Because right from the outset of war, strange and mysterious goings-on were taking place in New York. Night after night, Trotsky darted furtively in and out of Schiff's palace mansion, and in the dead of those same nights, it was a gathering of hoodlums in New York's Lower East Side. All of them Russian refugees at Trotsky's headquarters, and all were going through some mysterious sort of training process that was all shrouded in mystery. Nobody talked, although it did leak out that Schiff was financing all of Trotsky's activities. And suddenly Trotsky vanished, and so did approximately 300 of his trained hoodlums. Oh, actually, they were on the high seas in a ship, chartered ship, bound for a rendezvous with Lenin and his gang in Switzerland. And also on that ship was $20 million in gold. And the 20 mil was provided to finance the Bolsheviks' takeover of Russia. And in anticipation of Trotsky's arrival, Lenin prepared to throw a party in his Switzerland hideaway. And many of the very highest places in the world were to be guests at that party. And among them were the mysterious Colonel Edward Mandel House, Wilson's mentor and palsy walsy. More important, Schiff's special and confidential messenger. Another of the expected guests was Warburg of the Warburg banking clan in Germany, who was financing the Kaiser and whom the Kaiser had been rewarded by making him chief of the secret police of Germany. In addition, there were the Rothschilds of London, Paris, also Lithuanov, Kakanovich, Stalin, who was then head of a train bank-robbing gang of bandits. He was known as the Jesse James of the Urals. My friends, this story goes on and on. Ultimately, we know what happened with the Tsar. He was killed. Whatever happened to the 20 million in gold? Gee, I wonder what that's worth today. A lot more than 20 mil. This story goes on. And I have gotten maybe two-thirds through this. For those of you who have got a tremendously gifted desire to learn history, you go to Federal Observer later tonight, if you wish, or tomorrow, and under the search engine, you can type in these words. This is how long I'm having to wait to get this thing to the top of this thing. It's unreal. This thing is huge. It's entitled The Illuminati and the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, we can simplify this because I am going to, as soon as this program is over, I am going to move this article to the front page of Federal Observer. I originally published it May 21st of 2019. But here's where it becomes even more interesting. There is a complete, approximately 2.5 hour video of Myron Fagan giving this entire lecture. Fagan is quite an interesting cat. So you can continue to read. The title of the video is The Illuminati CFR Recordings, dated 1967. I want to share with you Myron Fagan's closing words, and then we're going to close the program down. Fagan says, my only wonder is, what will it take to awaken and arouse our people to the full proof? Perhaps this transcript will do it. 100,000 or a million copies of this transcript could do it. I pray to God it will, and I pray that this recording will inspire you, all of you, to spread this story to all loyal Americans in your community. And you can do it by playing it or reading it to study groups assembled in your homes at meetings of the American Legion. The VFW, the DAR, all other civic groups and women's clubs, especially the women's clubs who have their sons' lives at stake. With this transcript, I provide you with the weapon that will destroy the monster. For the love of God and of our country and of our children, use it. Get a copy. The print. Make a copy of the audio, the video. Make it available to everyone you possibly can, because now you know how filthy and rotten the whole system has been for God knows how many years. But then, we got trouble every day. Take care of yourselves. We're closing out with Frank Zappa. That'll make my buddy in New York real happy. The Illuminati and the Council on Foreign Relations. Give me a few minutes. It'll be up on Federal Observer. Take care of yourselves. I'll see you next week. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
Hey, you know something, people? I'm not black, but there's a whole lot of times I wish I could say I'm not white. Well, I've seen the fires burning and the local people turning on the merchants and the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turning bite them, and they say it served them right, because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. Yeah, and you can't understand me, and all that other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV, and all that mass stupidity that seems to grow more every day. Each time you hear something with say, you want to go and do your in, cause the color of your skin just don't appeal to him, no matter if it's black or white, because he's out for blood tonight. To sit around at home and watch this thing begin. But I'll bet there won't be many live to see it really end. Cause the fire in the street ain't like the fire in the heart. And in the eyes of all these people, don't you know that this could start on any street in any town, in any state, if any clown decides that now's the time to fight for some ideal he thinks is right. And if a million more agree, there ain't no great society as it applies to you and me. Our country isn't free, and the law refused to see if all that you can ever be is just a lousy janitor. And unless your uncle owns the store, you know that five and every four just won't amount to nothing more. They'll watch the rats go across the floor and make up songs about being poor. Blow your harmonica, son.
Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.